And so, no, the doctors of the church, such as St. Francis de Sales and St. Robert Bellarmine, do not teach that a pope must teach the heresy, quote, ex cathedra, which is a nonsensical and heretical concept. They teach that a man who is a manifest heretic ceases to be the pope. If he's explicitly a heretic, as St. Francis de Sales says in the Catholic Controversy, he loses his office. And so the guy doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't understand the magisterium, he doesn't understand Vatican I, he doesn't understand dogma, and he doesn't even reason logically. And he's not a Catholic because he believes that a pope can teach error ex cathedra. Another false argument that he makes concerns the 1917 Code of Canon Law. He says, quote, "What does the 1917 Code of Canon Law say about loss of office?" And he cites Canon 2264. Well, that's false right off the bat because Canon 2264 does not deal with loss of office. Canon 188 deals with loss of office. And in Canon 188.4, the 1917 Code of Canon Law teaches that a cleric who publicly defects from the Catholic faith loses his office without any declaration. That's what the code teaches about loss of office. And in Canon 197, it states clearly that ordinary power of jurisdiction is that which is attached to an office by law. Okay? So ordinary jurisdiction is attached to an office, like a ball and chain. If you assume the office, you get the jurisdiction. If you lose the office, you therefore lose the jurisdiction which is attached to that office. But he speciously cites Canon 2264, which is not talking about loss of office, but in fact is talking about how excommunicated persons, okay, can perform certain acts of jurisdiction validly. Not that they retain any offices in the church, certainly not heretics, and excommunicated can be minor or major, so it's not necessarily even talking about heretics in all cases there. And we've pointed this out in our talks on jurisdiction that a heretical bishop, for instance, who has lost his office, the church can supply jurisdiction to him for confession. So he can perform a certain act of jurisdiction validly. He cannot retain the office. And what further proves him wrong, and proves exactly what I'm saying correct, is that Canon 2264 itself, when it's talking about how these excommunicated persons who haven't been declared by name perform acts of jurisdiction validly, it makes reference to Canon 2261.3 and canons in that area. And all of those canons deal with how the faithful may approach certain excommunicated persons for the sacraments. Again, proving that the context is how an excommunicated person can perform a certain act of jurisdiction with validity, not that he retains the office. So he's completely wrong. And he's further proven wrong when we consider the teaching of the Magisterium. And Pope Leo XIII declares in Satis Cognitum, 1896, that, quote, "It is absurd to imagine that he who is outside can command in the church," end quote. Okay, a person who is a heretic who is outside cannot rule or command or hold office in the church. So he's completely wrong, and he has perverted the teaching of canon law. The next thing I want to mention is that someone mentioned to him in one of his articles on the state of a contest issue and so forth, the instance of the Vatican Lutheran agreement on justification, how the Vatican II sect agreed with Lutherans on justification and sold out to Lutherans, and he goes, quote, "Nonsense. First of all, the document was revised by the current Holy Father, who recognized some theological deficiencies in it. Second, the document was not even an act of the ordinary magisterium, and never promulgated as teaching. So even if it did agree to a heresy, in the end it never became an official formulary of the church. Lastly, it appears in no teaching document of the church, hence it can't be brought for consideration any more than Honorius's private letters can be considered acts of the magisterium. If this is the best you have to offer for sede vacantism, you are not going to get very far." End quote. So this is his attempted response to the manifestly heretical action of the joint declaration with Lutherans on justification. And this is why this guy won't debate us, because this pathetic response would be obliterated in a debate. First of all, the fact that it wasn't promulgated in a certain manner by the Vatican II antipopes makes no difference. Martin Luther did not have any power of the magisterium. Yet he was a heretic. You don't have to teach something, quote, magisterially, to be a heretic. The joint declaration with the Lutherans on justification is blatantly heretical. It denies the Council of Trent. It teaches that the Lutheran heresies on justification are no longer condemned by Trent. It teaches that they're not bound to believe in Trent. It teaches that some of the worst Lutheran heresies, such as faith alone, human beings are incapable of cooperating in their salvation, are compatible with Trent, or that Trent's canons no longer apply to them. It's blatantly heretical. It's a total endorsement of anathematized Protestant heresy. Okay, they approved it. John Paul II agreed with it. Okay, he's a heretic, regardless of how they promulgate it. It doesn't matter. Someone who could go out and deny the divinity of Christ, just because he doesn't publish it in an encyclical with solemn language, that doesn't mean that he's not a heretic. This is putrid argumentation. But this is what persuades people. This is how bad-willed, darkened, and how much in a fog these people are. And they think that a guy like this is intellectually sophisticated. He's just a fool. Furthermore, he displays his dishonesty because he gives the impression that Benedict XVI didn't agree with it. No, he was very involved in the final version of it. He praised it after it was done. And as anti-pope, on August 19, 2005, he said, quote, the important joint declaration on the doctrine of justification. In his address to Methodists on December 9, 2005, he said, I have been encouraged by the initiative which would bring the member churches of the World Methodist Council into association with the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification, signed by the Catholic Church and the Lutheran World Federation in 1999, end quote. So he's not only in full agreement with the final version of the document, contrary to the dishonest impression this heretic creates, but he's trying to get the Methodists into this, and he says that this joint declaration was, quote, signed by the Catholic Church. So that implies that this is the official teaching of the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church is free from error. The idea that the Church teaches error is heretical, and if he's saying that this is the teaching, this is what the Catholic Church has put itself into, then that means that you can't reject it. But regardless of whether you believe he has promulgated it in a binding fashion or not, he approves it. He likes it. He agrees with it. He's a heretic. And this proves that his sect is manifestly heretical. This Athanasius, a.k.a. Ryan, a.k.a. Chester, apostate. You're a Protestant. You're in communion with a guy who accepts faith alone. That's a fact. So anything else you're doing, which you think as Catholic is meaningless because you accept a guy who denies the papacy, who thinks the Orthodox leading pastors are in the church. And frankly, once you've seen the evidence that we've made available on our website and you've had time to digest it, look it over, examine it, and you don't denounce Benedict XVI as a heretic, I have to say you're just an idiot, okay? If you believe he's a Catholic, then you might as well be Orthodox, okay? He's constantly praising the Orthodox, saying he loves their church, that their ministers are great, that they don't need conversion, okay, that they are holy, okay, that their councils are holy. Okay, so it's a complete mockery of the papacy, and so for these abominable corruptors of the Catholic faith to put themselves out as if they're traditional Catholics and as if they stand for the papacy, it's an abomination, and that's why God blinds these fools. And that's why they attack people who actually understand the Catholic faith, who actually love the Catholic faith, who are defending it. And they're so blind to the truth. And so they're just of Satan. They're ministers of Satan. He knows nothing. This guy is a total fraud. We challenged him to a debate. And within 2 minutes, the guy's responding saying, you're not qualified. Okay, so his escape tactic is he's going to claim we're not qualified to debate with him. Give me a break. No, he won't debate because he's a coward, because in a debate he'd be destroyed, because his arguments are trash. He's a liar, a fraud, and a heretic. And if people think that what I'm saying is too hard, they need to remember that we didn't pick the fight with this guy. We didn't even basically know who this guy was, and he's calling us buffoons of Satan, saying that we're hacks, saying that we're peddling nonsense, lying about the buildings of our monastery, trying to insult us in other ways, okay, that we're fallacious. And so we simply responded and said, okay, Let's get on the phone. And he runs like a coward. And this is after he had told someone that he'd be willing to debate us on the phone. And he probably told that individual that he'd be willing to debate us on the phone because he didn't think that we would, you know, bother or whatever. But when it actually came down to it, he chickened out. And these guys like to spread their false arguments in writing, because in writing you can simply ignore key facts. You can simply repeat things that have already been refuted. Whereas you cannot get away with that in a telephone conversation, because the other person can immediately put you on the spot and show exactly what you are distorting, what you are not addressing, and what you are perverting. And in examining the false arguments that he makes and some of those that I've covered, we can see why he doesn't want to debate. This is Brother Peter Diamond here, and I was going to be checking in with an update concerning a certain false traditionalist who has been critical of us and some of our material. This individual is sort of half Fraternity of St. Peter, half Society of St. Pius X adherent. He's sort of somewhere in there. And he's attempted to refute arguments for the Sede Vacantis position, some of our stuff, etc. And we didn't really pay much attention to this individual, but he's been severely critical of us, and he comes across as this pseudo-intellectual and boasts about his language knowledge, and he's called us buffoons, he's called us hacks, he's called us all kinds of other things. He's lied about the buildings of our monastery, saying that they're something which they are not, and he acts like he knows us when we don't know almost anything about this individual at all, never have spoken with him. So anyway, we challenged him to a debate after someone emailed us and thought that that would be a good idea and brought to our attention some of the things he had been saying. And so we challenged him and said, okay, let's get on the phone and see if you can substantiate your position and your objections to the Sede Vacantis position. Let's see if you really understand Catholic teaching on the telephone. And we're mature. We'll give you a chance to speak. Okay, if we start to talk over each other, we'll go to a 2-minute, 3-minute format where we don't interrupt each other. We can handle that. We do that all the time. That's no problem. But you can't do it, and he refused to do it. Okay, after telling this individual, this go-between who was emailing him and emailing us, that he would debate us, that he would have an audio recording debate with us, when we actually challenged him and said, let's go, let's do this, he rejected. He was scared to death to get on the phone because he's a coward, he's a fraud, and his arguments would be completely refuted in a debate. And this is a picture of this guy, and I think that the picture in itself is quite revealing, because you see him there with his pipe and a vain attempt to look sophisticated, to look intellectual, okay? And if he stood for the truth, then maybe it wouldn't matter. But because he's a modernist, false traditionalist who accepts heretics as Catholics, I think this really tells you a lot about this individual. He's a guy who likes Chesterton and Belloc and philosophy and all of these things which savor of intellectual pride, okay, but is actually ignorant of the most important aspects of Catholic teaching, and I'm going to show that. Now, first of all of the arguments that this individual raises have already been dealt with and sufficiently and completely refuted, such as Vatican I's teaching on the perpetuity of the papal office, etc. And he's obviously oblivious to the fact that Benedict XVI is the number one denier of Vatican I in the world, because he purports to be the Pope but teaches that Vatican I isn't binding. So if Vatican I matters at all, it would be proof positive that Benedict XVI is not the Pope, and of course it is, because he says that the Orthodox don't have to accept it, the Protestants don't have to accept it. So if he'd get his head out of the sand, he'd realize that if Vatican I matters, then you are disproving your position, okay? And other examples he tries to bring up of past papal errors, they've already been refuted, and things that he says on that are completely illogical. But I could do a thorough expose and go through all of his false arguments, but it's already been done. But I just want to focus on a few of the things that he says, which reveal that he doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. For instance, someone asked him in his discussion of sedevacantism. Quote, "Are you aware that dogmas are to be understood and believed as they are once declared by the church?" And he says in response, "According to whom? Are you aware that the full extent of any teaching is not understood in this life? There is a thing called the development of doctrine. Truths of revelation become more apparent over time, or are deduced from earlier truths. The principal problem here is what is meant by declared by the church. I have never read that before, and would like to see what textbook of dogmatic theology you are getting that from, since the tradition of the church shows theologians behaving in a contrary manner." End quote. So someone asked him about the concept of believing dogmas as they were once declared by the church, and he says, according to whom, he's never read that before. And he says that the theologians behave in a contrary manner. Well, obviously, this heretic has never read the First Vatican Council, or he doesn't read with comprehension, or he doesn't spend much time studying the dogmatic decrees, the most important decrees that we could study, which give us the real heart and meat of the faith and the ability and the knowledge we need to form proper positions on these issues. He's ignorant of that. Okay, he's ignorant of the meat of Catholic faith. And the First Vatican Council is what declared that we are to believe dogmas as they were once declared. Pope Pius IX, First Vatican Council, Decree on Revelation, Denzinger 1800, quote, "Hence also that understanding of its sacred dogmas must be perpetually retained, which Holy Mother Church has once declared, and there must never be a recession or a going away from that meaning under the specious name of a deeper understanding," end quote. So obviously this guy knows nothing about understanding Catholic dogmas. Nothing. He's the epitome of a blind spiritual fool. As he's got his pipe and his waxing poetic about Belloc and Chesterton, and he's ignorant of the most essential truths of Catholic teaching and oblivious to a basic point which he would have learned if he studied our material. He also talks about the development of doctrine. He's obviously a fan of the modernist Cardinal Newman. And this is sort of the mold that a lot of these false traditionalists, especially who gravitate toward the Society of St. Pius X, there's a real pseudo-intellectual pride where they like Belloc and Chesterton and philosophy, and so, which is fine if you stood for the pure dogmatic truth and you had a real knowledge of what is important and you were honest, then it wouldn't matter. But because they savor that kind of stuff but accept all kinds of heresies, it really reveals that they are drawn to the things that aren't important, the quote wisdom of man, but not the wisdom of God. And so I think that that shows that the guy doesn't understand what he's talking about. That's just one example. And now that it's been pointed out that what he's saying reveals that he doesn't even understand or know, or that he hasn't even read carefully Vatican I, he'll probably take that down. But there's no doubt he said it, and we have it saved. Oh, by the way, this guy goes by the name Ryan Grant, Athanasius, and Chester. Moving on to another example of this guy's false argumentation. He says that a pope who would become a heretic would not lose his office unless he taught that heresy ex cathedra. That's actually what he says. And I'll quote him. He says, in reference to St. Francis de Sales' quote, that a pope who is explicitly a heretic would ipso facto cease to be the pope and cast himself out of the church, he says that, quote, "St. Francis' teaching only applies to a pope who teaches heresy ex cathedra," end quote. And in a comment on one of his articles on this topic, he says, quote, "I fully grant that an ex cathedra statement which was heretical would in fact cause the pope to lose his office, because that is the only time a guarantee is given of infallibility. Amongst the medievals, the term ex cathedra is nothing other than a word which means infallible, and those who debated the loss of papal office, such as Bellarmine, Canisius, and de Sales, among others, do so on the basis of an ex cathedra statement. Not one of them granted this would happen under ordinary magisterial teaching," end quote. So to get this straight, He says that a pope who becomes a heretic in his private capacity would not cease to be the pope, nor if he taught it in his ordinary magisterial capacity, but if he taught it ex cathedra, he would cease to be pope. Now, let's think about this. A pope teaching heresy ex cathedra. That's called impossible. It's a dogma defined by Vatican I that when a pope speaks ex cathedra, he is infallible. Anyone who denies that is anathema. A pope cannot teach heresy, let alone error, ex cathedra. He is infallible when he teaches ex cathedra. The notion of a pope teaching heresy ex cathedra is impossible. This is pure nonsense. The man he's talking about would have to lose his office before he taught anything which would meet the level of an ex cathedra statement. Or he would have had to have been an anti-pope from the beginning. God would never allow someone who is a true pope to teach heresy ex cathedra. This also makes a mockery of the papal office, because then anyone could say, well, any erroneous teaching we find among a true pope just proves that, you know, he wasn't the pope. No, that would make a mockery out of the papal office and papal infallibility. A truly elected pope could never teach error or heresy ex cathedra. So the guy's argument here is blatantly heretical, and it demonstrates that he cannot even reason logically or carefully. And so the argument is flat out stupid. And this is why guys like this won't get on the phone and debate you. Because in a debate, all this would be pointed out, and their specious argumentation, okay, would be refuted.